to United States versus Michener. Morris.
Good morning. Gareth Morris with my colleague Gary Adair for the petitioner, for the appellant, Robert Michener. This appears to be acceptance of responsibility day. In this case, Judge Crabb erred by not following Note 4 to Guideline 3E1.1, which provides that conduct resulting in an enhancement for obstruction of justice ordinarily indicates that the defendant has not accepted responsibility for his criminal conduct. There may, however, be extraordinary cases in which adjustments under both 3C1.1 and 3E1.1 may apply. This case is perhaps the perfect example of an extraordinary case. If you were writing an example to include in the language following this note, I think you could use Robert Michener's case. His obstruction, which he conceded fully, occurred in 2006 and 2007. He threatened a co-defendant or two co-defendants, and he sent money to one of them who fled to the Philippines. That was the obstructive conduct. He surrendered to the authorities. He confessed fully. He admitted his obstructive efforts in detail. He cooperated with the government and proffered. He entered into a plea agreement which required full and truthful statements about his offense. And the government, before the sentencing, affirmed in an affidavit that he had been fully truthful. His assistance included helping the government recover $135,000 in cash, which one of the co-defendants had stashed. At his change of plea hearing, Judge Crabb told Michener that probation would do a pre-sentencing report and would consider, quote, the fact that he had accepted responsibility. At sentencing, Michener admitted his offense and expressed remorse. The government, I don't think, disputes this. In his letter to the court, he described his unlawful, unhealthy, and shameful behavior. He described his alcohol and drug addiction, which he said was driving his misbehavior. And he concluded by saying, I blame no one but myself. I've caused harm to the community, my family, and myself, and I'm truly remorseful for all that I have done. At sentencing, and perhaps this is dispositive in my view, the government said that his acceptance was run-of-the-mill acceptance, admitting that he had accepted responsibility. Now, I suppose by saying run-of-the-mill, the thought was that it was just sort of ordinary acceptance. The court, I think, made a mistake in trying to weigh the obstructive conduct that occurred long before and his acceptance, and saying that one didn't offset the other.
Long before, you mean before he was arrested?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Not necessarily long before, but before he was arrested, I guess.
While before. And in fact, I argue in the brief that this is more in the nature of offense conduct. I mean, all drug conspiracies involve, and he conceded he was the leader, and he was enhanced for being the leader, involve managing people, telling them to keep their mouths shut, using throwaway phones and code words. I mean, the whole process of committing a crime is obstructing justice. And for him to go and tell his co-defendants, you better keep your mouth shut, you know, I don't want you talking. But anyway, obstruction was conceded at sentencing. It was conceded, although the judge in her statement of reasons, which is filed under seal, says that he objected to the obstruction enhancement, and that's just not so. So he completely acknowledged that his lawyer said he simply said that was the case. All of these cases decided by this court, one as recently as yesterday, I believe it was the Gonzalez-Mendoza case, which I looked at early this morning, deal with the issue of when there's obstruction and acceptance, and they are, have a consistent rule which I think is properly applied, which is if there's obstructive conduct merged into or close in time to the acceptance, if a defendant threatens a witness the next day and says, well, that didn't work, so I'm going to plead guilty, of course he shouldn't get acceptance of responsibility. And there are a host of cases in which the misconduct, the obstruction occurs, it's intervening. I mean, I think there were two today here where the issue, I think this, the Childs and Seller cases both involve intervening obstructive behavior, calling to have the bookcase cleared, whatever that meant. It happened, you know, after the proffer, I believe, or right at the same time. So that's not our case. Our case is obstruction long before, during the course of the commission of the crime, and then a full and complete acceptance of responsibility. And what more could Mr. Michener have done to truthfully and clearly accept responsibility? That's the standard the 3E1.1 calls for, is that there be clear acceptance. And it describes a variety of factors to be weighed in determining if there's acceptance. And admitting the conduct of the offense and relevant conduct, he did that. Terminating or withdrawing from the criminal conduct, surrendering. Voluntary assistance to authorities, he did that. Assistance in the recovery of the fruits and the instrumentalities of the offense, he did that. $135,000.
Do you know how much money he sent to the guy in the Philippines?
I think it was in the order of something like $10,000. The guy in the Philippines is writing him saying, if you don't help me out, I'm going to come back and fix you.
Objective was, I was going to commit, because he led the police to it. It was $129,000.
Yeah, there's two numbers floating around. I think Ms. Altman probably knows because it was her case. I think it was $135,000. So a substantial amount of cash was recovered. So I think, perhaps to end, that the admission by the government that he did accept responsibility and describing it as run-of-the-mill is dispositive here. That's all you have to do.
If there was, if the acceptance of responsibility was granted, what would ultimately be the range, sentencing range, do you know?
Well, if he should get the third point for acceptance because he certainly saved the government the expense of going to trial. He got three levels down for his substantial assistance, which took him to the 151, was the low end, and that's what he received. So in effect, by his by denial of acceptance, they took away, the court took away the full value of his substantial assistance reduction. The two offset each other. If he'd walked in and simply pled guilty, I think he would have come out just the same, without assistance and without the extent of his cooperation.
Well, at least it didn't offset his even getting it. Sometimes that happens when you have obstruction. And so he did get the substantial assistance.
Well, that is correct. And the reason he got it is because the plea agreement called for him to fully and truthfully tell everything about the case and about his co-defendants, and he did that. Okay. So he did exactly what he should have done. I'll reserve the rest of my time if there's no question.
Ms. Altman?
Good morning again, Your Honors. Elizabeth Altman appearing for the United States, and I'm here to talk about acceptance of responsibility again this morning. Before I begin the gist of my argument, I would like to specifically address two things. One, the defense counsel mentioned this morning, once is more heavily relied on in his brief. In the briefs, there is quite a bit of argument, especially in the reply brief, that by failing to recommend acceptance of responsibility, the government is somehow not complying with the plea agreement. And I just want to say today that that could not be further from the truth. The plea agreement did not mention acceptance of responsibility, and in the Western District of Wisconsin, that essentially means that the government, at the point the plea agreement is sent out, is not recommending acceptance of responsibility. If the government is contemplating that reduction, it clearly says so in the plea agreement, and the court can see that in the co-defendant's plea agreements, which are in the record. So when the PSR writer says in the PSR that there was no reduction for acceptance of responsibility contemplated, that is true. The PSR writer knows that it was not contained within the plea agreement, knows that the government isn't recommending it at the time the plea agreement is sent. And so the idea that the government is not complying with the plea agreement could not be more false. Second, the other thing I wanted to touch on, and this was brought up in defense counsel's argument, is the statement by the court in the plea hearing. And she does go through a list of factors that the probation officer would consider in writing the pre-sentence report. And one of those factors is the fact that he pleaded guilty, and that does go towards acceptance of responsibility. And the probation officer did consider that in writing the pre-sentence report. But the court never specifically says you will be granted a reduction for acceptance of responsibility. It is simply going through factors that would be considered, and they were considered. The probation officer considered the fact that he had pled guilty and found it not to be the extraordinary case or circumstance or whatever the term is, to find that plea warranted acceptance. Now, this case has three distinct and separate guideline sections in play, or this issue does. Obstruction under 3C1.1, acceptance under 3E.1, and then substantial assistance under 5K1.1. The defendant did receive an enhancement for obstruction, for threatening two witnesses, and for sending money to a co-defendant to keep him from returning to the country to testify against him. This was not a spur-of-the-moment obstructive behavior. This was not one-time obstructive behavior. This was a course of obstructive behavior, the sending the payments to the co-defendant, that occurred over the course of a year. Now, the defendant claims in his brief, and again today, that somehow the judge misunderstood or said that he had objected to the enhancement for obstruction when he did not. But if you review the objections to the pre-sentence report and the sentencing transcript, it's clear he did admit the behavior. He did do that. But he did not ever anywhere admit that it warranted an enhancement under 3C1.1. He never withdrew the objection. He made excuses and tried to explain the behavior. The district court asked the government to argue why he should not get the enhancement, and the court had to make a finding based on the record before it that the enhancement was warranted. And I submit to you today, if the court had not made that finding and had not included it in her statement of reasons, we would be here today arguing that she had improperly made or had made incomplete findings regarding the sentence. So the idea that this statement in the statement of reasons by the district court that he objected to the enhancement is not incorrect and does not in any way show that the district court incorrectly applied the guidelines 3C1.1 and 3E1.1. So obstruction is dealt with, and because of the instruction of enhancement, it creates the presumption that the defendant has not accepted responsibility. With that in mind, we look to acceptance and substantial assistance, the interplay between those two. The defendant claims that because he provided a full and complete and truthful statement regarding his conduct and the conduct of others, he has complied with the plea agreement and is entitled to a reduction for acceptance. But this mixes apples and oranges. The plea agreement said that if he provided a full and complete and truthful statement regarding others, which he did, the government admits that he did, the government admitted at sentencing that he did, the government admitted in its 5K motion that he did, that the government would file the 5K motion to reward him accordingly. And the government did that. So that is dealt with through that mechanism, which is the proper way to deal with that type of conduct on his behalf. So now what we're left with is whether he should have gotten the reduction for acceptance of responsibility. Looking at that alone, taking out cooperation because that's already been accounted for in the 5K motion, we have a defendant who pleaded guilty and expressed some remorse, and that's it. And this court has held in United States versus Ewing that a timely plea of guilty and allocution do not make an extraordinary case. And an extraordinary case is what's warranted for this defendant to get acceptance. 3E1.1 tells us that a defendant who pleads guilty is not entitled to a reduction as a matter of right. And not only that, because he obstructed, it's presumed that he does not get this reduction. Now, of course, there are cases that say you can have both an increase for acceptance and a decrease, or I'm sorry, an increase for obstruction and a decrease for acceptance. But those cases do say that there still is something extraordinary required for this to happen. And in this case, whether you call it extraordinary circumstances or extraordinary cases or simply extraordinary, there isn't anything extraordinary that the defendant did. He pled guilty, and he expressed some remorse.
Now, Solomon, could you speak to the issue which your colleague raised of the fact that the obstruction is somewhat temporally removed from the time of arrest and the entry of the plea?
The threats were somewhat removed. The money order payments were continuing. I don't recall the date of the last one. If the court is interested in those dates, I can certainly submit those to the court. But they were continuing over the course of the year, and there was certainly no indication that but for his arrest, those payments to keep what he believed to be a principal witness out of the country to testify against him out of the country would have stopped.
Well, did they continue until the time of arrest?
As I indicated, Your Honor, I apologize. I don't know the last date of the payment in relation to his arrest.
Does the record contain that?
I don't believe so. I will double check, and if it does, I will certainly send supplemental authority.
I mean, it is kind of important whether it would be continuing or not. And that seems to have become a.
Well, I can tell you that that Mr. Schwanke, whom the payments went to, was arrested on September 27th of 2006. And so after December 27th of 2006, he fled the country. The payments to him continued for at least a year. So that puts us to at least 2007, fall of 2007. And the indictment occurred in March of 2008. So they're not that far removed. They didn't stop an extremely long time before the indictment.
What happened in March of 2008?
The indictment occurred in March of 2008.
Indictment of this defendant.
Correct.
Would it be fair to say that Judge Crabb looked at this as a rather extraordinary obstruction?
I believe she did say it was an extraordinary case
of
obstruction.
She had no extraordinary acceptance of responsibility, but she did have an extraordinary obstruction. That was her view.
Yes. She did indicate that she thought these acts, particularly keeping I don't know which one she thought was more egregious. She did indicate it was an extraordinary case of obstruction, and recognizing that to get acceptance, there needed to be extraordinary circumstances, she didn't see them there. And quite frankly, they weren't there. Taking away the cooperation, there was little more than a guilty plea. Defense counsel asked what more could he have done under 3E1.1 note 1 and said he'd voluntarily terminated or withdrew from his criminal conduct or associations. Well, that's not true. He kept committing his crime even after people had been stopped by law enforcement and arrested, and maintained his association with the person to whom he was sending the money out of the country, Mr. Schwanke. He also did not voluntarily surrender to authorities promptly after the commission of the offense. There were people being taken down in this left and right, and rather than come in and say, "You got me, I'm here to be arrested," he waited and kept committing crimes until he was indicted.
If I have the timeline correct, March of 2008, the indictment was returned against us.
Correct.
When was he arrested?
Shortly after that, I believe he was summonsed in.
He was what?
Summonsed in. He was not arrested. Correct.
And then in June, he agreed to plead guilty.
Yes.
And when did the payment stop? When was the last payment, I should say, not stop?
As I indicated, Your Honor, I apologize. I don't know the date of the last payment. And if it's in the record somewhere, I will certainly forward that to the court. They did last at least a year. As I said, Mr. Schwanke left the country probably in October of 2006. So had they been going on for at least a year, they lasted at least until September or October of 2007.
When did this marijuana dealing take place that the district court relied upon?
The marijuana dealing?
Didn't she say that in any event she wouldn't have given that there had been some marijuana dealing by this individual fairly late in the process?
Correct, Your Honor. The entire case was a marijuana conspiracy. So as people were taken off and as he was hearing that people were arrested and as he was hearing that people were cooperating, he was still actively dealing marijuana. And, in fact, after one of the persons was arrested, he tried to increase his marijuana dealing to make up for the money that was lost when that person couldn't pay for the marijuana because it had been confiscated.
So her point was, I gather Judge Cram's point was, that as the house of cards started to fall, he increased his activity to maintain his profit.
Certainly for a period of time he did.
This is after the indictment was returned.
So before the indictment was returned. After the indictment was returned, there does not seem to be any evidence of obstructive behavior.
So there were arrests made?
Of other people that were not included in this indictment.
Not included in this indictment.
Correct. Any other questions? Thank you.
More? How much time? You have 1.5, but we'll give you more time since we...
Thank you. The plea agreement says nothing about any guidelines. It's silent on it. So the defendant in reading it and his counsel in reading it had no way to interpret that meant that there was any intention not to give him acceptance of responsibility. And he went ahead and changed his plea. And then the judge said, the fact of your acceptance will be considered by probation. He withdrew his objection to the obstruction enhancement. There's nothing more he could have done. And Ms. Altman said in the sentencing hearing, and it seems to me that Mr. Michener is agreeing, this is at page 7, seems to me that Mr. Michener is agreeing that he committed the obstructive behavior, which of course he did. He is just trying to explain why he did it. And that's exactly what he did in a letter to the court. He said, I was under pressure and so on. And he tried to soften the facts that he had admitted. On the timeline, as Ms. Altman fairly admitted, the latest that they know of any payments was the fall of 2007, 6 months before he's charged and arrested. Now, if he'd been charged with witness tampering under Section 1512, and then he had pled guilty and admitted his responsibility, he would have got acceptance of responsibility.
When was the recipient of these funds arrested?
I don't believe he has. I think he's still in the Philippines. So there's a six-month gap. That distinguishes this case from almost every other case that I've read where there's both obstruction and acceptance. It separates the two. It puts this conduct into the sphere of being part of his criminal conduct. He did continue to distribute drugs. This happens all the time. There are hundreds of people who plead guilty in drug conspiracies who are arrested and charged at a point in time after they knew that there were investigations. Investigations are going on all the time. Everybody knows it. Why else do they have these silly code words and the throwaway phones and the, you know, meeting behind the McDonald's? I mean, this is what they do. This is what conspirators do to avoid prosecution. And all crimes are obstruction of justice. This is the suggestion that because he got a substantial assistance reduction, that means that doesn't count, that his cooperation and his efforts to assist the authorities doesn't count, is belied by the very language of the guideline, which says that cooperating and assisting the government in obtaining the fruits of the crime and the instrumentalities is a factor to be considered in whether there is acceptance. The note 4 says the question is whether there's an indication of acceptance. The issue is not to weigh whether there's super obstruction or super acceptance. The issue is, was there in fact acceptance? And clearly here there was. It was complete. And this offsetting weighing test that the judge uses, I think, is a mistake, and you can't find cases that support it. You do look at all the circumstances, and that's appropriate, but there's a primary question, and I used a sort of a gastrointestinal analogy here that acceptance of responsibility is the castor oil of the criminal justice system. There's hardly any other guideline that's used more often to help cases get processed. And the reward for fessing up, avoiding a trial, is to tell the full and complete truth. And that's what Mr. Michener did. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case